He led the way, and Pallas Athena followed. Once in the high-roofed hall, he took her lance and fixed it firm in a burnished rack against a sturdy pillar, there where row on row of spears, embattled Odysseus's spears, stood stacked and waiting. Then he escorted her to a high, elaborate chair of honour. Over it draped a cloth, and here he placed his guest, with a stool to rest her feet. But for himself he drew up a low reclining chair beside her, richly painted, clear of the press of suitors. Concerned his guest offended by their uproar might shrink from food in the midst of such a mob. He hoped once more to ask him about his long-lost father. A maid brought water soon in a graceful golden pitcher, and over a silver basin tipped it out so they might rinse their hands, and pulled a gleaming table to their side. A staid housekeeper brought on bread to serve them, appetizers aplenty too, lavish with her bounty. A carver lifted platters of meat towards them, meats of every sort, and set beside them golden cups, and time and again a page came round and poured them wine. But now the suitors trooped in with all their swagger and took their seats on low and high-backed chairs. Heralds poured water over their hands for rinsing, serving maids brought bread heaped high in trays, and the young men brimmed the mixing bowls with wine. They reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they'd put aside desire for food and drink, the suitors set their minds on other pleasures, song and dancing, all that crowns a feast. A herald placed an ornate lyre in Phemius's hands, the bard who always performed among them there. They forced the man to sing. A rippling prelude, and no sooner had he struck up his rousing song than Telemachus, head close to Athena's sparkling eyes, spoke low to his guest so no one else could hear. "Dear stranger, would you be shocked by what I say? Look at them over there, not a care in the world, just lyres and tunes. Easy for them, all right. They feed on another's goods and go scot-free. A man whose white bones lie strewn in the rain somewhere, rotting away on land or rolling down the ocean's salty swells. But that man, if they caught sight of him home in Ithaca, by God, they'd all pray to be faster on their feet than richer in bars of gold and heavy robes. But now, no use, he's died a wretched death. No comforts left for us. Not even if someone somewhere says he's coming home. The day of his return will never dawn. Enough. Tell me about yourself now, clearly, point by point. Who are you? Where are you from? Your city? Your parents? What sort of vessel brought you? Why did the sailors land you here in Ithaca? Who did they say they are? I hardly think you came this way on foot. And tell me this for a fact. I need to know, is this your first time here? Or are you a friend, a father's, a guest from the old days? Once crowds of other men would come to our house on visits, visitor that he was, when he walked among the living. Her eyes glinting, Goddess Athena answered, "My whole story, of course, I'll tell it, point by point. Wise old Anchialus was my father. My own name is Mentes, lord of the Taphian men who love their oars, and here I've come just now with ship and crew, sailing the wine-dark sea to foreign ports of call, to Temisi out for bronze, our cargo, gleaming iron. Our ship lies moored off farmlands far from town, riding in Rhythron Cove beneath Mount Nyan's woods. As for the ties between your father and myself, we've been friends forever, I'm proud to say, and he would bear me out if you went and questioned old Lord Laertes. He, I gather, no longer ventures into town, but lives a life of hardship all to himself, off on his farmstead with an aged serving woman who tends him well, who gives him food and drink when weariness has taken hold of his withered limbs, from hauling him